This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a gospel musical with local hat queens, or a sneak peek at an upcoming contemporary ballet season, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Regina Taylor's Crowns continues its run at Le Petit Theatre, the gospel musical adapted from the book by Michael Cunningham and Craig Marbury, is a coming-of-age story, a musical journey through Black history told by local hat queens with roots in the African-American church. Director Tomi Myrick is joined by actresses Jasmine Johnson and Barbara Schwartz. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi.
Hey. You know, I can feel the fellowship of the church as we begin this conversation. Crowns has garnered much attention since its debut in the early 2000s. Let's begin with the title, Crowns. What does it refer to?
This is Tomi. Actually, it refers to the adornment of African American women. The crowns represent those regal aspects of what we do to our heads, hats as well as hair.
The hats are big, they're bold and beautiful, but it's not a fashion statement that endears audiences to this production. What do the hats represent?
This is Jasmine. They represent struggle, love, they represent flirtation, they represent pain, they represent death, they represent celebration, they represent joy, they represent the many markers that sort of signify our journey as women of color.
This is Barbara. It also represents women that are proud to wear these hats. It makes you feel good, you know, when you put your crown on. It means so much to us.
And the storyline. What's being explored in Crowns?
The journey of a young girl from New York who is sent down south to live with her grandmother after her brother is killed and after she herself have been getting into a lot of trouble up north. You know, it's an interesting thing about the African-American community. When we get in trouble in the north, they tend to send you down south. And when we get in trouble down south, they tend to send you up north. And this is one of these situations where Yolanda, who is 18 years old, is being sent down south to live with her grandmother to keep her out of trouble and to introduce her to another way of life.
And Barbara, you play the grandmother.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about your character and how do you get into character to play this role?
God is the thing that helps Mother Shaw put on this particular personality. I just reflect back to the women from my church. I feel that Mama Shaw is very quiet but stern. And I like to say that when it comes to church and going before God, I'm very meticulous. I'm full of the Spirit, and I tell it like it is. And when I speak, you listen.
And Jasmine, you are on the receiving end. You are the teenager.
Yes, yes, I am.
Tell us about your role and how you get into character.
I play Yolanda. In a lot of ways, her journey parallels my own personal journey. She doesn't conform to traditional ideologies or doctrine or anything of that nature. She does what she wants, how she wants to do it, when she wants to do it. She's stubborn, you know, she doesn't like to conform. And in a lot of ways, I find myself in that. And also just her journey of going from this place of really not believing in religion, really not believing in the conventional idea of God, and really just existing according to her own terms, and then coming into the space with her grandmother and all these different women of the church and really being open and humbling herself to receive the wisdom and the knowledge that they have to impart on her. In a lot of ways, I've lived that. And also just in terms of prepping for the role, music is a very big part of my process. She's from Brooklyn, so I listen to a lot of rap music, MC Light, Queen Latifah, Nas, Jay-Z, a lot of New York rappers, just to kind of get in that headspace. space. Also, she goes on this very personal, emotional journey throughout the course of the show, allowing myself to kind of be stripped down to the bare bones of total transparency and vulnerability as we're kind of going through the course of the story. That has kind of been the biggest help and also the biggest challenge for me playing this character.
Tell me, you set this production in Louisiana. Why did you do that? And why is this a timely production for 2018?
I did set it in Louisiana because I wanted everyone to understand that it doesn't matter where this show originates from, whether it's Chicago, New York, North Carolina, that it addresses African-American women no matter where they are, because our history is the same no matter where you are. The other reason why I set it in Louisiana is because it was important that the things that we do as Louisianians, and most importantly, as African-American women who live in Louisiana, can be slightly different, even though our belief factors are the same. This particular play takes us through our history. I grew up in a time when we were segregated as a culture. I remember D.H. Holmes. I remember Gauchos. I remember sitting on the back of the bus. And I think it's important that audiences that come to see Crowns can relate to this. You ask, why is this so vital at this time? It is always vital because our young people, the more they drift away from our culture, the more they drift away from our history, the more they drift away from our ancestors, then the more they drift away from themselves. As African Americans who live in America, it's only when you know the strength and the fortitude of your ancestors do you then arm yourself with your survival mechanisms. And the history of who we are as a people, the history of who we are as women, is important to our survival in America today.
How do you tell the story? How does it unfold?
In song and dance and stories, you know, the most interesting thing about this play is that there is no dialogue. You think that there is no conversation, but there is. It's nonverbal conversation. It's conversation with the audience. The audience becomes the second half of that dialogue. You know, throughout this entire show, there are only two lines in the play where there is a statement that is made by one character and answered by another. Outside of that, it's done in monologues and soliloquies.
And this is done through gospel, hip-hop?
Hip-hop. Jazz is done through film, visual images. So it's a multimedia production that actually lifts you from one location to another, from New York, and sets you right down in the bayous of Louisiana, and then takes you all the way to Africa and back again.
And the crowns, the hats themselves, are they too a character?
Absolutely. They all kind of possess a character and a personality all their own, and they all serve a different function. Some will pull a man in, some will push a man away, some signify death, some they signify loss, some they signify love. They all kind of tell a story of their own. And even Yolanda's, it's hip-hop, it's street, it's urban 2018. So they all definitely for sure tell a different story.
And the women, they take a lot of pride in their hats. They have this great line in the show. You can take... Somebody help me with that line.
Oh, the line is, you can borrow my children before you can borrow my hats, because my children know they wear home.
That's...
My hats may not.
Yeah. And it says a lot.
It does say a lot.
Now, the crowns. Is that something that perhaps is earned during this production?
There's a story that precedes each hat. There's a story of struggle, whether it be the financial sacrifice that had to be made to invest in that hat, or the time that was made finding and purchasing the materials to make it yourself. They all carry a history with them of these women giving something of themselves in order to have these hats in their lives. Some women have 40, some women have 200. And the stories surrounding how each of those hats were acquired. They each kind of carry a very distinct and rich history behind them.
What kernel of wisdom will folks take away from this show?
Crowns are for royalty. Crowns are for kings and queens, prince and princesses. These are the ones that wear crowns. But taking a hat and putting it on your head doesn't make you a queen. It comes from the inside. I think that that's the wisdom of this show. Dignity, stateliness, diplomacy, fortitude, courage, strength, honesty. These are the things that puts you in the position of being crowned king or queen.
Those are the Hat Queen rules. Don't break them.
Director Tomi Myrick and actresses Jasmine Johnson and Barbara Schwartz, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Regina Taylor's Crowns, directed by Tomi Myrick, runs through July 1st at Le Petit Theater. More info is online at lepetittheater.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. The Marigny Opera House, also known as the Church of the Arts, turns 7 this year. It is home to the Marigny Opera Ballet, and it's an exciting time for co-founder and executive director Dave Hurlburt. He's gearing up for the 2018-19 ballet season and joins us now with a sneak peek. Dave, welcome back.
Thanks, Diane.
Did you have any idea 7 years ago when you purchased the former Holy Trinity Catholic Church that you were on the cutting edge of a post-Katrina arts trend in converting houses of worship into art spaces?
No, I did not. That didn't go through my mind. We got the church, Old Holy Trinity Church, to save it. We understood it was going to be pulled down or converted into private use of some type. So the goal from the beginning 7 years ago was to save the building and to make any necessary repairs to it. The idea of starting the Marigny Opera House Foundation, which supports local artists, didn't come right away. We got that vision several months after getting the building and initiating some pretty necessary repairs. What happened was the New Orleans Fringe Festival that year approached us right after we got the building and asked if they could perform during the upcoming Fringe Festival. It was November, 7 years ago. And I couldn't believe that anyone wanted to perform in that space. We didn't yet have electricity or plumbing. The repairs weren't completed. There were holes in the floor, the walls, the ceiling. We'd just gotten rid of the termites, mostly, and yet they wanted to perform in there. So I said, sure. And it was that demonstrated to me what the building wanted to be. I remember the opening night, and there were people in the church. They had a power generator. I could see lights in the windows. I could hear families in there enjoying performances. I could hear live music. And it brought the neighborhood to life. And it seemed to make so many people happy. It made me happy that night. I was walking around outside the church just listening to it outside. And it occurred to me, this is what the building should be. This is what the building was built to do. This is what it should be, a gathering place. It should be a community place. And I knew that at the time, certainly, there weren't enough venues for performing artists. I thought that the Marigny Opera House, if we continued to repair it and put it into good shape, could serve as an additional resource for all of the city's classical musicians, jazz musicians, dancers, songwriters, puppeteers, actors. That was my vision. And boy, that vision came true right away. I think as soon as we opened the doors, the artists came. And 7 years on, they're still there.
The Marigny Opera House is home to a wide array of performances and events. It even hosted a major celebrity wedding back in the day that created quite a buzz.
Yes. Solange Knowles was married at the Marigny Opera House a while back.
This is Beyoncé's sister?
This is the sister of Beyoncé, who was there at the wedding. It was a celebrity wedding. I was taken by surprise a bit with the scope and the magnitude of that wedding. Solange had been coming to our dance events and to some recitals. I knew who she was. And after one of the recitals, she came up and said that she and her fiancé wanted to get married at the Marigny Opera House. I thought that was great. I was delighted to have, you know, a devoted fan of the Opera House being married there. And I guess in my mind, I had sort of a cozy wedding ceremony that I was thinking of, but it was not. It was it was international news. And I think that was the first time a lot of people around the world ever heard of the Marigny Opera House.
Fast forward to this year, 2018. It was a banner one for the ballet at Gambit's Classical Arts Awards.
It sure was. I was taken by surprise. I was hoping that we might win an award. We were nominated for a number of things. But I guess my tip-off should have been, you know, we usually have a table towards the back of the room. And when we walked in, the Opera House table was right at the front. And I thought they'd made a mistake. So anyway, we sat at our table and we won a lot of awards. We kept going up and back and up and back with Gambit Awards for the Marigny Opera Ballet. It was one of the best days of my life.
What would you say is your biggest contribution to the cultural community?
I'm hoping my biggest contribution will be in the future. My goal is to continue what I'm doing and to get even better at what I'm doing. I think to date, the biggest contribution is simply opening the doors of that church and making a home for our local performing artists. I believe last year there were around 300 local performing artists performing at the Marigny Opera House. And most of those performances were donation-based. We invited the world in to see these performers. And that's got to be a big contribution.
And you're about to open your fifth season. What can we look forward to?
We're doing three programs next season. Program one is a full-length premiere. It's called The Follies of 1915. It's a full-length comedy based on Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, except that it's set in 1915 and in New Orleans. The music is going to be provided by the New Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. They're a well-known local group that specializes in music of that period. Fortunately, the music of that period, and why we selected 1915 as a year, is that is when a dance craze swept America. There's been nothing like it ever since. Everyone was taking dancing lessons. That is when the foxtrot, Latin American dances, all were introduced, demonstrated by Vernon and Irene Castle. It was a very exciting time. It was a period of ragtime, period of early jazz, period of operetta, a very rich musical tradition. And we're pulling all of that in, sort of the inspiration for this ballet. Our second program is going to be in January. We're going to present two half-hour ballets, both of them premieres. One of them is called Querelle, which is based on a novel by French novelist Jean Genet. It is about a drug-dealing, murderous sailor in the port of Brest in France in the 40s. It's set in a bordello, and the new music that we've commissioned is by Byron Asher. It'll be for chamber orchestra. We're following that with Pierrot Lunaire. The music is by Arnold Schoenberg. It's quite a classic from the early 20th century. It'll be sung by local mezzo Phyllis Tregel and accompanied by the new Resonance Chamber Orchestra. That's going to be choreographed by Rebecca Allen. It's a contemporary ballet based on the Commedia dell'arte, Pierrot, Harlequin, Columbine. For program three, which will end our season in March, we're going to perform The Book of Saints again. The Book of Saints premiered over a year ago to great acclaim. ¶¶ That's our full-length ballet that's based on the lives of Francis of Assisi, Teresa of Avila, and St. Sebastian the Martyr. And the music is by the Coup de Voix Choral Ensemble and the New Resonance Chamber Orchestra. So it's a very big musical piece as well.
Wow, that's quite a season, quite a lot to look forward to. And in looking forward, Dave, what is your vision for the future of the ballet and the Marigny Opera House?
My vision for the Marigny Opera Ballet is that we will continue to make surprising progress in our artistry, in our technique, in our repertoire, and that we will actually tour. I think we've been performing all this time at the church. It's time for us to go to audiences. We're already putting plans into place to try to start with regional touring around the Gulf Coast. We'd like to perform in festivals. My vision for the Marigny Opera House as a whole is that we will continue to keep our doors open and we will present even more local performing artists. It seems that we've been doing an average of 2.5 concerts or recitals every week. I think we can do even more. It's a great source of satisfaction following these young artists in their careers and the excitement of what they do.
Marigny Opera Ballet Executive Director Dave Hilbert, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The Marigny Opera Ballet opens its fifth season in November. More info is online at marignyoperahouse.org. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a member of the Marigny Opera House Foundation Board. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Helles Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.